If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Now, if you've been paying attention to the headlines and joining us on the show this week, you'd be well aware that earlier this week we confirmed that the Department of Higher Education had deregistered EduCore's affiliated school groups due to a lack of compliance with the regulations in terms of higher institutions of higher learning. But more than that, had also failed to submit its financial statements for the 2021 and 2022 financial year. Coupled with that, there were ongoing concerns that were highlighted by the Minister Blade Nzimande in terms of the conduct of institutions, namely impacting Damlin, City Varsity and Lucium Colleges. Well, we have been speaking to various representatives to get an understanding as to what happens now. We've spoken to the Department of Education to understand where the shortfalls came in. We've reached out to EduCore. They have yet to give us any feedback. We've spoken to some of their peers in the industry to find out what alternatives exist for students in the country. And tonight we're going to speak to a consumer lawyer to help us unpack the legalities and the recourse that students have. But for now, we're also speaking to a leader of a privately owned higher institution of learning to help us contextualize and understand the regulations and the processes that need to be followed for institutions of this nature to exist in South Africa. That's Helen Burs, the CEO of Inscape Education Group, education group that actually dates back to the 80s, if I'm not mistaken, given its establishment not only in South Africa, but of course starting off in Cape Town, primarily being focused as a design institution assisting students there. Helen, such a pleasure to have you with us and welcome to the show.
Hi, good evening. It's lovely and thank you so much for accommodating me and including me. What an opportunity.
Oh, fantastic. It's lovely to always hear from you and especially getting a perspective in terms of education and understanding of what it is we should be mindful of. I guess just to contextualize why it is that we're speaking to you today, I'm keen for you just to give us an understanding of the growth and evolution of Inscape Education Group, especially for us to align that then to the necessary accreditation processes that a business like yours, an institution like yours, would have to follow.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So Inscape has been around since 1981, so you're correct, since the early 80s. We've got five campuses around South Africa and a distance learning campus. We house about 1,500 students each year and about 200 employees. And we operate in the creative and built environment sector. We're also an institutional member of SAPI, which is the South African Private Higher Education Association, and SAPI actually represents more than 70% of the students who sit in the private higher education sector. Insights there. And then, of course, you know, I do some work for the CHE, the Council on Higher Education, who's responsible for our accreditation processes. So there as a program evaluator. And recently I've been appointed to their Institutional Audit Committee. And then with other organizations like Design Education Forum of Southern Africa, where I'm currently the president-elect, and also now heading up as an academic director for Genesis South Africa, which is a new startup private higher education institution. So I guess this evening in my capacity as expert in private higher education specifically.
Yes.
So I'm hoping I can answer some questions for
Definitely.
You.
Definitely. And I asked that deliberately. You said we do get full context of who and what you're representing and for many of our listeners to fully grasp that. I guess let's start there, especially given your representation in your capacity, helping represent CHE this evening, the Council of Higher Education. Accreditation Committee. I think this is so important because it is what the Minister of Higher Education alluded to. Not only the lack of submission of financial results from the likes of EduCore, but also certain sections of the regulations that they didn't comply with. And I understand we're not here to bash EduCore, but really just be educated in the process of accreditation. Help take us into that particular perspective. What is reviewed?
Yeah.
Because these are independent businesses that need to be going concerns. Hence, their financial standing is imperative. But educate us further in terms of the other realm in the spectrum of regulation that needs to be followed.
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, I just want to make it clear that I don't represent the Council on Higher Education, but that I sit on certain committees and obviously have insight into these processes. So as a private higher education institution, we need to have our programs and our sites of delivery accredited by the Council on Higher Education. We need to be registered with the Department of Higher Education and Training, and our qualifications need to be registered on SAQA, the South African Qualifications Authority. And without those three boxes ticked, cannot operate as a private higher education institution. And so, of course, there's different types of reporting. With the Council on Higher Education, it would be at if you're submitting for a new program or you relocating a site, opening a new site of delivery and so on. And then there's a reaccreditation process. There's an institutional audit process that we take part in. And then with the Department of Higher Education and Training, it's organization wide, and we submit reports annually to them, which includes not only information on student data and the programs that we're offering, but we have to submit our audited financial statements. We need to submit occupational health and safety certificates. We need to demonstrate that the infrastructure is sound for the students, staff are suitably qualified. So, you know, it's broad and it's also quite intense, but it's vital to ensure quality across the sector and, to ensure that the students are looked after, really.
Outside of the Department of Higher Education, is there an alternative regulatory board?
There are. So there's the QCTO, there's MLUSI at school levels, but in higher education, we're specifically regulated by the Department of Higher Education and Training and the Council on Higher Education.
I ask this because I'm keen to understand if there is, I guess, an intersection of regulation, guidance, and even a follow-through and auditing of processes that might be followed by higher learning institutions.
So I'm not quite understanding what you're asking me, if there are other regulators that we would also comply with.
Yes, essentially just to understand if there is a heightened level of communication between the Department of
absolutely,
and these regulators to keep things on track with private institutions.
Yes, absolutely there is. And in fact, the Department of Higher Education and Training and the Council on Higher Education are extremely consultative. So they're supportive of the institutions. They work very closely with the institutions. Just today, we had a group of SAPI members. So the organization that I spoke about, South African Private Higher Education, we had a group of member institutions who got together, and we had representation from the Council of Higher Education. And so they work very, very closely with us and us with them. So it's most definitely not a policing forum. It's, we're all trying to move the sector forward together. And everybody is quite interested in the compliance aspect and the delivering quality to students in South Africa.
100%. And Helen, I can imagine, naturally, I guess, regulators will take a look at what's happened at EduCorps specifically. But right now, a key area of concern is the students themselves, how they've been impacted, how they can either qualify through credit accumulation transfer policy or recognition of prior learning. Mm. As I can imagine, many of your peers within SAPI will be overwhelmed and inundated now with applications from students when the academic year has already started.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have been receiving a lot of phone calls. Our institution, Inscape, and I know this, and I think it's the same probably at many other institutions, are starting to or have already started engaging with the department as well as Council on Higher Education. And together, we're actually trying to solve for the problem. Many of my colleagues in the industry have been quite sacrificial about how we're going to deal with this. It's most certainly not an opportunistic exercise. I think everybody who's in education is there for a calling and for a reason, and has really got the students' best interest at heart. And so certainly everybody I've spoken to who's in a private higher education institution feels deeply for those students and also for the staff that have been left high and dry. And so we're doing everything that we possibly can. And like I say, the institutions as well as the regulatory bodies are engaging already to see how can we solve for this problem together. with the least amount of negative impact for the student at the end of the day.
Definitely. And maybe let's explore that further. And you mentioned a very important aspect. Staff is another angle that we certainly hope to follow up on here on the show, because they're significant contributors to the progress of these institutions, but also the students that they teach. But coming to students, I'm told that in some cases, when it comes to following through with the CAT process or RPL, that there might be cost implications that would be involved here. And for anyone who's starting mid-year at a private institution of higher learning, I can imagine that that comes at a cost. Help us unpack if there are any rights, recourse, or responsibilities that the students can look to EduCorps to assist with.
Yeah, so I can't speak on behalf of EduCorps what the students might be able to get out of EduCorps. There's obviously certain implications for the institution that they should be planning for the transition of their students. I'm not sure what plans they have in place. I can't really speak on their behalf. But certainly the other institutions are being quite accommodating. There is a creditor communication transfer process that needs to be considered. There are also regulations that you can only receive up to 50% of the credits for any qualification. And so effectively what that means is if I am, if I've completed year one and two of a 3-year degree, I actually can't enroll into the third year in another institution. And those are the sorts of conversations we're busy having with the Council on Higher Education. How can we overcome that? How can we bridge students into other institutions if it's necessary? What could that look like? Because I think this is a very specific and unique situation. So I think everybody is kind of coming together to see how we can sort it out. There may be administrative costs for institutions. I know for one, our institution will waive those costs, and I'm sure other institutions would do the same. At the end of the day, the institutions also need to pay their own salaries, right? So they can't now start offering free courses for everybody. But I do know that all the institutions are being quite accommodating and working together with the regulators.
100%. To close off with, Ellen, we will speak to a consumer law expert in just a moment to give us further insight on that. But to close off with, you've given us a real overview and beautiful perspective in the understanding of the inner workings of private higher institutions and the various bodies that collaborate to drive their success. Help us understand how the industry will now be engaging to ensure that we avoid a future EduCorps scenario.
So like I say, the institutions who are part of SAPI, and we account for more than 70% of the students in the sector, that we are all registered and accredited institutions that maintain that accreditation, that registration annually. And there are mechanisms that, for example, the Council on Higher Education implements. So institutional audits, they come into the institutions. We have very specific frameworks within which to work. There are a lot of workshops. There's a lot of upskilling and training of staff constantly to engage them in these processes. And there really is a drive for quality education amongst those institutions that do comply and are invested in the future of these students. And I think, you know, just some of the conversations I've been having with colleagues is reflecting on the kind of responsibility that we have as institutions. We know that our country is fraught with corruption and all sorts of issues and problems and so on. And we're in such a fortunate position where we can really impact that next generation. And we don't take that lightly. The responsibility as a higher education institution to A, set the example, and B, to send graduates out into the world who are change makers and leaders and ethical and responsible and encompass all of that is key. And I think we get that. We understand that. And it's unfortunate that, there's one bad apple amongst, but certainly I don't think that we should be painting the private higher education sector with this one instance of what's happened, as devastating as it is. I believe that there's a lot of hope in that we can see in the rest of the sector and what is being, the work that's being done.
100%.
Yeah,
we'll have to leave it there for today, but truly appreciate your time and the perspective that you've given us. It is a story that we will continue to look at and peel back at the many layers of it as the outcomes do evolve. Thank you again for your time. That's
Thank you, and have a blessed Easter weekend.
You too. Wishing you a safe one with family there, Helen. That's Helen Burse, who's the CEO of Inscape Education Group. It is a private design school, but of course, as you've heard, she's also represented and sits on various boards that assist South African private higher learning institutions in terms of the registration and accreditation process, and was giving us some insight into that. On the line now, we're also joined by Trudy Brookman, who is a consumer law expert, to talk us through some of the rights or legal recourse that consumers can tap into to make sure that they... I guess, get some level of assistance, especially from EduCorps, as the deregistration process has left thousands of students stranded. Trudy, thank you so much for your time and welcome to the show. I'm glad that you've had the opportunity to listen to some of the perspective and background from Helen. And I guess for many parents and students who are impacted right now, they might be asking themselves, well, hold on, do I have any claim of damages? And what would that claim typically look like? Trudy? Oh, Trudy, it looks like you're still on mute.
I'm muted.
There we go. We can hear you loud and clear.
Good evening to all of the listeners and to you, Good Lady, too. Thank you very much for having me on the show. There is recourse. We do have a vast volume of the law supporting the parents in their dilemma, or the students who are paying for themselves. And there really are various opportunities that students can make use of to get their money back from EduCorps if they really are left stranded and need to spend more on their education, spend more time reaching the same outcome that they were studying for, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm. And maybe talk us through that process, because I guess it differs from scenario to scenario. First of all, what kind of damages would students be able to claim? And does it speak to just the financial support? And maybe let's also contextualize this for students who might have prepaid their fees for the academic year versus someone perhaps who still has fees outstanding and wants to go through the recognition of prior learning process or the CAT process of credit accumulation transfer policy, but the institution might hold back on the results because of a lack of payment in fees. Guide us, because I can imagine it's very bespoke depending on the individual case.
Yes. So let's focus on what the basic principle is. The basic principle is that every student or every parent who has enrolled a student at one of the EduCorps institutions has entered into a contract with EduCorps to provide educational services, and in exchange for that, they've paid the fees. When EduCorps stops being able to provide those educational services to the student as a result of the deregistration, then that amounts to breach of contract. So just to put that in that sort of legal framework, what are our remedies as South Africans? If there is breach of contract that is committed against us, well, we have a right to claim damages. Now, in order to figure out the damages, as you say, for the different categories, let's try and work in broad principles. Mm-hmm. Firstly, if you have paid for tuition and that tuition is not going to happen, then you can get a refund for the amount that hasn't happened. So let's say you've paid for the whole year, but the actual classes stop in June. I'm not sure exactly what the plan would be. It looks as though the minister has said that the deregistered institutions may continue until the end of the academic year. So it may be that doesn't actually kick in, okay, that you are able to complete your year. But if the particular institution you're at, Dermalin or whoever, and they stop in June, you've paid for the whole year, then you're entitled to get your money back for the fees from July to December. So that looks like about 50% of the prepaid fees. So that's the basic principle there. And I'll talk about how to actually get that money out of the particular college or educational institution that you are studied at in a moment. Mm-hmm. Then let's say you are able to complete the year, but now from next year, you need to attend another institution and they are not giving you the full credit for the various modules that you have actually already completed. Mm. Then for any module that you need to redo, you are entitled to your damages for that, and that encompasses not just your tuition fees, it also covers things like your textbooks, your accommodation, the cost of your living expenses for that time, not lavishly, but the normal living expenses of a student for that time, and you can claim all of that back as a result of the breach of contract by your educational institution. So those to me are the two broad categories, prepaid tuition that isn't granted, or a module that you now have to repeat because of some technical reason relating to that module not being credited by the new place that you're going to have to continue your studies at.
Trudy, to close off with this, obviously is very important information for many students to be mindful of, but it's not just a matter of going back to the institution and saying, you owe me. Help us understand how we need to prepare in terms of the record keeping, understanding the financial limitations and restrictions, or a kind of scope that would effectively cover this, and how to present this to the institution should listeners and students still be struggling to get a hold of them adequately. So what's the process? I'm assuming, you know, documentation and then seeking legal assistance or approaching the education group directly?
Exactly. Excellent question. So let's get really practical. The first step is going to be to figure out what your loss is. You're going to have to put a rand and cents amount to it, and you're going to need written proof of exactly how much that will be. So let's say you're in a position where you are claiming back 50% of your tuition fees. That's not so complicated. You just make the calculation. If you are needing to repeat a module, then you are going to need a letter from the new educational institution saying they aren't giving you credit for that module or those modules. And then you will need written proof and evidence of the cost of the tuition, the cost of the textbooks, and all of those things together. Then once you've got your amount down and the evidence of that, you are going to write a letter of demand. And you can probably do that yourself if you're fairly savvy, or you can get a lawyer to write that for you. Yeah. I'm going to try and give you the most cost-effective solution. Yes. So try to write the letter yourself, attach the copies of the various invoices, the letter relating to the accreditation of the modules or not, et cetera, et cetera. Attach all of that to your letter, and then make two photocopies of the letter. So you're going to take the original one to the institution and maybe just go there yourself and then get an official there to sign on the photocopy that they have received it with the date and the time and their name. So you have proof that you've delivered the letter of demand to them. That's the first step.
Okay.
Second step. So in your letter, you're going to give them a deadline of 14 days, and you're going to put your bank details there, because what you're asking for is for the money to be refunded into your bank account, right? So definitely don't leave that out of the letter. Then you wait 14 days. So you've handed in the letter. Now you're counting off 14 days. You get your 14 days. You check your bank account. If the money isn't in there, which I expect is probably quite likely, then you need to go to the next step. The next step, you have essentially three options. You can, if your claim is less than 20,000 Rand, go to the small claims court, which is the closest to the deregistered institution's premises, and you take your letter of demand and the proof that it was that signature on there with the date and the time that it was delivered. And then the clerk of the small claims court is going to run you through the process of issuing a summons and going through the process, and there will be assistance for you. You don't need a lawyer to help you with that. The clerk will guide you through the process. So that's a great process. Google the small claims court that's closest to the legal, to the deregistered institution's premises.
Yeah.
Okay. Second option. If you live in a province with a consumer court, so there's one in Gauteng, in KwaZulu-Natal, I think there's one in Limpopo, just do a search under the provincial government of your province and find out whether there's a consumer court. If there is one, approach the consumer court with your letter of demand and say to them, can you take it from there? Just send me the complaint form. You complete the complaint form, and then the process will roll out from there. And then once again, the officials at the consumer court will assist you in getting getting your money refunded. 100%. Once you have an order from the small claims court or from the consumer court, then once again, you will be guided by the officials there to make that an order of the court. And then the sheriff of the court will go out, collect your money from the institution, and then pay that into your account. So you don't need to do that yourself. The sheriff does that for us.
I tell you what.
The third option is to go to the magistrate's court, and there you have to appoint an attorney. But once again, the attorney will guide you through the process if that's your choice.
Definitely. I think we definitely need to have you back with us next week to unpack this further in terms of some of the details.
Anytime.
And the costs involved. But really appreciative of the fact that you've given us a foundation to start off from, and that many who have been impacted will certainly be able to build up on this knowledge. Thank you kindly for your time this evening, Trudy.
Thank you very much for having me on, and all the very best to the parents and the students who are so affected. My heart really goes out to you.
100%. Thank you so much, Trudy. Wishing you a wonderful weekend as well. That's Trudy Brookman, consumer law expert, who's given us guidelines, especially for those students who have been impacted. Damlin, Lucium, City Varsity, if you have been impacted, there is legal recourse you can follow in terms of claiming damages. One thing that's important, though, understand what it is that you can claim for, whether it's fees, whether it's additional cost incurred when writing exams to get admitted to new institutions. These are aspects that you need to make sure are fully documented, that you have copies of, and of course you need to start by approaching the education institution, EduCore Group, and its respective brands to make sure you get some kind of feedback before then taking it perhaps to the consumer court or the magistrate's court.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.